This is the order of battle!
Thanks for joining the Order of Battle podcast for another episode. Joel, Jason, and Sometimes A discuss collecting G.I. Joe, other 1/18 scale action figures, and in general, what sparks joy. It's a lot of things, but almost always toys. This is the Order of Battle podcast. This is our second podcast conversation with Tim Dunnigan, or Captain Power, and Davy Crockett. As we mentioned the first time, I had a chance to sit down with him, and as we talked about after both Joe Fest and Kentuckiana, Tim came out on the road and joined us at those two conventions and met a lot of his fans. We all had a blast, and this was just an opportunity to sit back down with him and discuss that a little bit. I hope you enjoy this conversation and his wealth of stories. It was a genuine pleasure to be a part of the team that helped bring Tim to Augusta, Georgia, and to just south of Louisville, Kentucky, as well as becoming friends and having these conversations. Dig in and enjoy. I really enjoyed this conversation. And thanks again, Tim.
How are you, man? How's your family? How's the kid? How's everybody?
Things are well. It's been quite the busy summer, and Alexander just turned 13 last week, so...
Give him my best. Happy birthday.
We had a good week of celebration, and then rolled right into the holiday weekend, and I have some old high school friends I haven't seen since 94.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah, one of them is a lighting director who started in theater, went into operas, and now is in television and movies, and so... He was sort of hanging out, complaining about all the lighting in every room we went into.
Is that right? They can't leave it behind, those guys. Well, you know, that was what I originally wanted to be, was a lighting. I wanted to go into theatrical lighting when I first got into theater and acting and all that kind of stuff. So I understand it. I think lighting's exciting. I think it's, you know, for me as an actor, I remember... Anytime, you know, you'd rehearse a play and you'd rehearse it for 2-3 weeks, whatever it was. Then you finally got on the stage. Then you'd have the, all of a sudden, that first rehearsal where you had the lights. For me, that was always, I don't know, it all just made it more, it all came together right there. And I would really, I would always be, it would all, I'm always fascinated by the lights. So I don't know why, it's just how I am. I just always think that, or, you know, the set, too, when you'd see the real set, because usually you were rehearsing with tape on a floor where a couch was or whatever it was, you know. But the lighting to me was always exciting.
Without it, we all look a lot different and you can't see shit. And can really, it changes the whole mood.
Let me tell you, a good lighting designer can save your play. Sometimes when you hear, you know, people, oh, you know, like you can hear it. You can hear it from the stage. And that's, you know, the set or the lighting or something like that. That makes your job much easier as convincing them that whatever it is you're doing, you know. Well, I was lucky enough, as you know, to just spend some time back with my family. And I got to go to the St. Louis City soccer games with my oldest friend from 7th grade.
Oh, wow.
And we talk, but we don't talk as often. But, you know, we always both come in. It takes about 2 or 3 minutes, and it's everything's just kind of back to what it was, you know, since we were in 7th grade. Those kind of things are the best.
It takes just long enough for your eyes to rewrite what you look like to what you used to look like, and then you're back in.
Yeah, that's for sure, for us, for sure.
You start seeing the kid again in your friends.
Yeah, you know, we always had very identical senses of humor and things like that, and that hasn't changed.
That's amazing. I mean, you know, over the years, to be able to still be close to somebody like that, especially as you've gone in your different directions.
And, you know, here's a guy, I went to grade school with him. I went to high school with him. I went to college with him. I worked with him. And now every time I go home, I see him, you know. And then there's a group of people like that that I never miss seeing that I grew up with. And I'm lucky to have. They're a great bunch of people. And I love seeing them, and I miss them. After 30-whatever years, I still miss them.
You were in the middle of that trip when you came out and hung out with us in Louisville, and then you went right back to that family trip.
Yeah, I got to go back and stay for another week after that, so it was great. Over the years, you know, you don't get home as often as you wish you could. But this year, I've been lucky. I've been home, you know, maybe 3 or 4 weeks this year already. And I plan on going, you know, I want to go back in the fall. So.
Do you always just do it alone or?
Usually, Jenny doesn't like to fly. So, but we drive and we really enjoy it, to tell you the truth. You know, we're not in a big rush or anything. So we kind of have it mapped out. We make it from L.A. to Albuquerque, New Mexico, the first day. And then the second day, we make it just about to Joplin, Missouri. And then the next day, it's just a few hours to St. Louis. So we've got it down, and we really enjoy the drive. That's the way she does it. I prefer, you know, it's a lot nicer to get on a plane and be there 3 hours, but you don't have to go through the hassle of what LAX is right now. anybody who's coming into Los Angeles, I'm just warning you for the next 4 years, because the Olympics are coming in 28.
Oh, yeah.
They are doing the work at the airport. You know, they're putting an entire train, you know, like in Atlanta, you know how they have the train system there. They're putting in something similar to that. Coming back from St. Louis, first of all, they canceled my flight. So then I had to, sitting at the gate, I had to rebook another flight to go through like Phoenix and then, you know, all that kind of crap. But once I got to the airport, it took Jenny over an hour. She got to the airport, but to get into the airport, the traffic into the airport was an hour.
Oh, geez.
And it took me, I had checked a bag because I had been gone for a couple of weeks. So I had a bigger bag. And it took me an hour and 30 minutes to get my bag.
That is...
If you can fly into Ontario or Burbank, I highly recommend it.
I haven't flown into Los Angeles since 2019. I had to be in Anaheim for a meeting. We were on ground for 23 hours.
Oh, God.
I do miss traveling, but I don't miss that kind of traveling.
You know, I used to travel a lot. I mean, when you're an actor, you travel a lot. And plus, I had another job when I worked for my friend who we put gourmet chocolates in all the Costcos up and down the West Coast from Seattle all the way down to San Diego.
Oh, wow.
I would travel a lot in that. So I was always on a plane. I was always renting a car. I was, you know, one of those guys. You know, back then, I didn't mind it too much. It was kind of exciting. But, you know, just now, just with the trips to Augusta and then the trips to, you know, St. Louis and then to Louisville and I'm just like, oh, man, I don't miss it at all. I don't miss airports. I don't miss sitting on planes. I don't miss canceled flights.
Yeah.
I don't miss any of that.
It takes its toll.
You know, my brother-in-law, Colleen's husband, you know, for his entire life, every Monday he'd get on a plane and then fly back every Friday.
Whew.
I mean, for I don't know how many years of their marriage, my sister, you know, it was during the week she was on her own because his job, he worked for Metropolitan Life Insurance and he was an auditor.
Yeah.
And so he would have to fly all over, you know, he'd fly everywhere for every week for years. I mean, and I always think, geez, I don't think I could have done that. I would have gone nuts. I'd been one of those stories you read in the paper about some crazy guy on a plane.
And actually, that's the fun thing about why I asked if you wanted to sit down again was that we shared a cool summer together.
We did. Yeah, we got to spend some time together, you know, and for me, you know, the adventure of it was profound. I mean, you know, remember, you know, when I got off the plane in Atlanta, I had no idea what I was about to step into. And, you know, you can ask Stephen Boyd, you know, I was nervous. I was, you know, thinking, what if, you know, and of course, I'm nervous because you and Todd and all of you had gone to a lot of trouble to make sure I had this table and he'd get my posters made up and, you know. And I was deathly afraid that, you know, I was going to just sit there and people were like, who the hell's Jim Dunnigan, you know? So that lasted for, we sat Friday night, we sat down there in the booth, and I think it took about 15 minutes. And man, what an adventure. That was the start of that whole just meeting people, meeting fans. Meeting people who were fans of something else, but who recognized Captain Power, recognized, and the best, of course, were the guys who came up and said, you know, just, you have no idea, you know, I can't believe I'm talking to you. And, you know, I'm looking around like, who are you talking to me? You know, as I said, and you've probably heard this damn story too much, Jason, because you've been with me all summer, but I never, you know, I always in my heart felt that maybe in the, you know, did we do bad things for kids when we were doing this show and the guns and the ships and interactive TV? Were those ladies, were those people right that we were a bad influence on these kids? And it stuck with me. I didn't believe it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say, oh, I was all, you know, voted out. No, but it did bother me. It bothered me, you know, because, you know, you never know. You could be wrong because there's no way to prove it. So to have that many people, to have someone, you know, just one person, much less four or five, say, I drove all the way here to wherever because I heard you were going to be here. And I wanted to tell you how much, you know, that show and you, your performance and you, who you were. And, it, you know, it made me want to go into law enforcement. It made me want to go into the military. It made me become an engineer with Lockheed or so. I heard all kinds of tales like this that I had no idea. So for me, this summer has been just a pure joy. And the travel or whatever, who cares, you know? I got to meet, the bottom line is I met so many wonderful people, just so many nice people. And a lot of them weren't Captain Power fans. It had nothing to do with it. It just had to do with a certain kind of person that shows up at these festivals. And they're so dedicated and so knowledgeable of about everything involved with whatever it is. For me, I could just tell you, I left 2 or 3 days later a much more positive, happy person than when I got there. So, I mean, it really made my summer. It made my year. Yes, I had a blast this summer.
From our perspective, we were confident that we know how to set things up. We know how to promote and we know how to and get on the table what is needed to appeal to a wide range of people. But you're Captain Power and Davy and Face, and this is a G.I. Joe show. So we were a bit nervous, like, will people turn out for you because you're not G.I. Joe? And that ended the first person we saw tear up. We did not waste your time.
Oh, no.
And that was the worry, right? But when we saw the first person tear up, we were like, okay, cool. We have done right by Tim. We have not screwed him. We have not wasted his time. And this summer is going to be great. But it's the opposite side of the coin. You were worried, are you going to meet people? And we were worried, are we going to waste your time? And it turned out that together, we just got to see the best of people.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
The number of people lined up in Augusta at a G.I. Joe show, taking photos, having you sign things, telling you stories. And Steve, he might have vibrated through his skin if he had gotten like 2% more excited. It was amazing having Steve with us because, you know, he's so far away and up in Canada that he normally is not with us. And so that was also a joy from my perspective.
Mine too. You know, working closely and getting to know Steve is like I got to know you and Todd and the other guys. You know, that's by far the best part. I mean, nothing else even compares to that because when you're 70 years old almost, you know, you're not out making new friends a lot. You know, you got a lot of old friends, but you're not making a lot. So this summer, I, you know, it's been a long time. I'll just, you know, that I made so many new friends who I am now keeping in contact with, you know, from you to one of the guys who came up and talked to us who was had a hair salon in Cincinnati, but he made that big blue jet. That was there in Louisville.
Yes.
That big blue, whatever, G.I. Joe thing. But anyway, there's another guy I got to meet. An interesting, wonderful guy, Chris. You know, a new friend. So it's just been really a blessing. That's all I can tell you. Just a blessing.
That's kind of one of those things where when you and I were talking and you were like, I don't want to just sell a signature and a thank you. I want to talk to people.
Right.
I want to get to know folks.
Right.
You were very true to your word. I mean, people chewed on your ear forever, and then you also shared stories that had, I mean, we were watching crowds form around your stories there in Augusta, and we haven't even gotten to Louisville yet, but, you know, Augusta is 40,000 square foot. It is, I'm not sure what the population is. It's a lot, and it gets crowded, and you're set up right across from a couple independent toy makers on one side and toy vendors on another. And across the way from you was Charles Michael Hill, who had written Transformers and G.I. Joe cartoons. He had written a lot of things, but for this particular community, that was his important part. And then Seth Green came through. So you had some contemporaries there to chat with, as well as just all of us. And when we sat all your stuff out, it felt very crowded. And we were like, okay, I hope you're comfortable. You're 6'7". You're not a petite person. So we didn't want to you in, but things were moving. You sold badges. You sold your belt. You sold scripts and signatures. And then you just told a ton of stories.
Well, yeah. I mean, after 30 something years, you got them, you know, it's just that most people don't really care to hear about them that much.
You were very busy in Augusta to the point where I don't think you moved much.
No, I was sat there. I got up once. I think I went to the bathroom. But other than that, I couldn't get out of the chair, which was fine with me. But the highlights for me were, it has to do with all of them have to do with who I met. The first one that comes to mind was a gentleman who brought his son. And I believe he told me he was autistic. And that he had told me about how he had watched the show as a kid, and he wanted to buy the DVD collection I had because he wanted him to watch it.
Nice.
He wanted him to get the values of the show. And I said, well, I hope okay. And I signed stuff for him, and I gave him a couple things, I don't know. And his son, you know, he actually, you know, he said a few words to me, which evidently was great. But then I got an email from him afterwards, with his son standing in front of the TV with it on. And he said, he loves it. He loves that he got to meet you and that he loves the show. And you know, well, for me, that was just incredible. The gentleman who walked up to me, as I kind of mentioned a little earlier, and said, I just wanted to thank you. You know, you're responsible for me being an engineer with Lockheed. And I said, well, that's awfully kind of you, but I don't think I had much to do with that, pal. He said, no, you're the scripts and you and the way you and the actors portrayed it, I believed it. And I wanted to learn more science. I wanted to know more about it. And he goes, and that's what led me in that direction. And he was perfectly serious about it.
That's mind blowing, right?
You know, when you're sitting on a set wearing that power suit and you're tired as hell, you're not thinking that you're going to do that with somebody. Trust me. But all these years later, a couple brothers that drove from Maryland, they had a third brother. He couldn't make it. And those guys' stories about when they were little and they loved Captain Power, but their parents wouldn't buy more than one power jet, I guess. Well, they were 45 or 50 bucks. And he said the fights we would have over who could use the power. I was in tears. I was laughing so hard. It was fantastic. My memories, that's what my memories are of.
That's awesome.
Of those encounters. And also the guy who bought the belt.
Yeah.
When I saw him tear up when I gave him the belt. You know, people said, how could you sell that thing? You know why? Because it's been sitting in a locker for 25 years.
Yeah.
That's why. And this guy is going to give it he's going to appreciate this belt way more than anyone I could have given it to.
It's going to end up in a case. It's going to end up in a display. It's going to end up the focal point of stories that he tells to friends and family. It's going to end up loved.
And see, through that, then, you know, selfishly, I live on.
Absolutely.
See, then I'll live. That's a pretty cool feeling.
And through the generosity of getting that belt to that guy, your cast members and that crew also get to live on.
Right.
You're helping a whole group of people live on. I think it's beautiful. I think that's kind of the fun of not just nostalgia, because nostalgia can be insidious, but passion and digging in and coming and meeting guys like yourself or Michael Hill or Seth Green or, you know, and picking up these artifacts and showing them love. And I think that's really special. You were selling badges and scripts and all kinds of things. And then when you and your sister drove out to Louisville, you brought even more things, and you had a photo book with you.
I brought a photo, my own personal photos, and the reason was because I had brought those. I really didn't even intend to bring it, but then when Steve Boyd saw them, he was like, oh my God, are these your personal? And I was like, well, yeah. And he goes, oh man, put these out. And sure enough, people, you know, and again, this is just us backstage and, you know, having lunch. you know, I didn't think anybody would. Well, to the point where I made copies of all of them. And I think in the next, if we do more shows, I might put together a little personal book that people can pick up.
Oh, wow.
That'll be a little bit different than just a headshot or something. It'll be, you know, the crew and everybody else. And we'll sell it as a little Captain Power book or something for people if they want it, you know, if they want it.
And I mean, again, that goes back to everybody living on.
There it is.
Right. Our own childhoods live on as we get to remember these things and re-experience them as adults when we get to show them to our kids.
Well, and I'll tell you another great part of it, Jason, is I get to relive it. And not to be a selfish guy here, but you know, I did that a long time ago, and there's a lot has happened in between. And, you know, a lot of when, you know, you were saying how I was, you know, I tell a story and people come remember. You know, it's not like I had those stories. Those just, they would, as I talked to people, that they would come back to me. All right. Where I'd say, oh, you know what? That reminds me one time when we were doing this, you know, this happened. And it was all, so I got to relive it too and kind of re-experience, you know, one of the best times of my life. That Captain Tower was really a, you know, top part of my life.
That's what I was hoping that, you know, as we talk about Augusta and then Louisville, maybe we have some time that you could tell a few more stories that I was hearing people interact with when we were in Louisville and that you didn't tell the first time. And the people that had listened to your first conversation with me were going on and on about your stories. In Louisville, you brought your sister and, you know, we had kind of set our situation up a little different than we did in Augusta. We had the room. And so we had Todd, Ryan, and Joel running the booth on one wall, or we had a charity booth beside you. And then it was you and your sister. And your sister immediately was like, hey, I don't know what I'm doing. And I said, that's fine. I'm here to be your help, to be your Steve. And then she just stayed and did it. And she went from, I don't know what I'm doing, to running shop all weekend. And she was a blast.
That's my sister.
I genuinely enjoyed your sister. She was so much fun. She'd take the piss out of you sometimes. You'd pick back. And it was very joyful just to see you guys interacting all weekend.
First of all, it was really kind of you guys to, I said, can I bring my sister? You were like, bring, yeah, of course, you know. And, you know, I just wanted her. She had never experienced anything like that during my career as an actor, really. You know, she never really got to see me shoot anything or at that time. So this was kind of her first experience seeing like people reacting to me as the parts I played. My sister was just like, okay, now we got to do this. And now we got to, you know, she just got on top of it. She loved it. She was in there. You know, like you mentioned, I brought some more things that were at my family home in St. Louis that my sister had. And she went up in the attic and drug down all this stuff. I was like, Colleen, please stop. No, there's more. I'll get it. You know, and sure enough, and we found some just, you know, fantastic stuff, you know, just great, great old stuff that I didn't even know I still had. So, you know, she was a big part of that showing up there. And then she loved meeting the people. Just, she's a lot like me. You know, she loved meeting people and talking and telling stories and whatever.
She was very effusive and it was lovely. I enjoyed her quite a bit. And for my part, since Todd, Joel, and Ryan had the booth on one side and the kids had the charity booth, I sort of stood in the pivot point between you and them. So if anybody needed me, I was there. But I really didn't have much to do because Colleen helped you. So I just sort of stood at the point of like, if you guys needed me, I was there. If the kids needed me. And so I just got to stand and enjoy hanging out, but mentioning the things you guys brought, like this time you brought your Davy Crockett cap and you brought a gun.
Yeah, I've got I have acquired the last remaining actual from the original mold for the Captain Power pistol. I've got it. And I got it from the guy who made it. I mean, it's directly from him.
It's amazing.
And the good part is I'm also going to get scouts and pilots. I'm going to get them.
It was incredible to see this pre-production item and to see that it had survived this whole time. It was still in good condition.
Right. It's perfect.
Yeah. And it was what the screen use weapons were made from.
Well, the cool part is, Jason, is the first one out of the mold was the one that I used.
Uh-huh.
This was the second one out of the mold that he put aside and put away.
Oh, what a smart man.
Yeah, well, yeah. He's benefited from it now, trust me. But that's okay. And I'm going to take it. He gave me the name that did the original gold plating on it and on Pilots, the silver. And I'm going to take it back there and I'm going to restore them both back to perfect, both the exact like they were in the show.
That will be incredible. I cannot wait to see photos of that if you're willing to share them.
Next time I'm doing a show or something, they'll be there. Those will be there.
One of the things that I really liked, we didn't do it in Augusta, and maybe we should have, because in Louisville, not Steve Boyd, who helped us in Augusta, but Steve, the guy who runs the Louisville show, which is Kentuckiana, he asked if you would do a panel. And we thought, oh, we should have done that in Augusta. You and I walked in and there was one person sitting in the back. Your sister walks in and then the place filled up. Every seat was filled.
And so, you know, I walked in and went, oh, thank God there's four or five people here. Because I was afraid there's going to be nobody there, you know? So I thought it's going to be, well, my sister's going to ask me questions, you know, who knows, you know. But I thought, okay, good. And then as I remember, I went and sat down, and then people started to the point where I believe there were people standing. We didn't have enough chairs.
It was standing room only. And there were points where people were laughing loud enough where it was hard for me to hear you. And I'm sitting beside you at the front of the room, which to me was huge because I could see everyone's face as you're telling the stories. And I could just right there see just how engaged and how captivated. And then the laughter and the shouts. And at the end, there were some really smart questions.
Well, you know, that's one of the great stories I tell now from the show at Augusta. One of my new stories is there was a gentleman who came by the first night. He was a lovely guy and a fan of the show. You know, he was asking me some questions or saying how much he liked it. And I talked to him for a long time. Steve was saying, do you want to move along? And I was like, no, this is fine. He came back the next day and, you know, he was wearing like a helmet of some kind. He said, I have a Captain Power question for you. He kept saying it. But there were people coming up. So I kept saying, okay, hang on. And then, you know, so he stood and he waited. And finally he said, I have a question. I said, okay, what's your question? He said, why was Captain Power in charge when you had a major among the soldiers of the future? And I looked at him and I said, that's the greatest question I've ever heard in my life. And I, you know what? I don't know. That's a great question. I have no answer for you.
That is incredible. I'm sorry, I missed that. That is incredible.
You should have seen it. He said it, and Steve and I were, and we both just sat there and looked at him. And then we looked at each other and went, I've never thought of that. Yeah, you know, it was the best question I got the whole time. It was fantastic.
One of my favorite questions that I was listening to in Louisville was someone was talking to you about breaking with a co-star.
Oh.
And you started talking about not being able to look at certain co-stars as you were doing scenes. And I was in tears listening to this.
Oh, yeah. What happens is you, first of all, you're all going through the same thing together. That always bonds people. Anytime you go, whatever it is, you're on a baseball team, you're in a play together, you work in a shop together, whatever it is. But when you're in a cast of a show and you're spending 12, 13, 14 hours a day together, now add on, they put you in these suits where you are totally uncomfortable. You are hot and it's hot. And you're to the point where you're feeling lightheaded. And then they come in and you worked on a speech all night and then they change it 10 minutes before. You know, this brings you together. This brings you very closely together. Well, then you add it, put in your you get so tired, you know, that it just takes a look because you can. And that look is not just, you know, the look is, gee, mini Christmas, how long are we going to have? You know, whatever it is, just you and you tell them, don't look at me, you know. And I told that story there about I worked with two actors who worked in the Loretta Hilton Repertory in St. Louis Repertory now. They were in the rep company. In other words, they do a series of plays and all the same people would do the plays. Well, they would work together for, I don't know how many, 10 something years. They couldn't for 10 years. They would tell you, don't look at me. Don't look. These guys would could not do a scene together, and they worked together for 10 years. So, yeah, when, on Captain Power, sometimes, you know, sometimes you catch a glimpse of yourself, and then the line you had to say, and you'd think, you know, what the hell am I doing? You know, or something go wrong, or somebody trip, you know, whatever it is, you know, you go to shoot your gun and they fly out of your hand, or, you know, something fall over. Or those things is, you know, you remember that, you know, or somebody, you're in the middle of a scene and somebody sneezes real loud. I think that happened. You know, if I'm not wrong, during one of the, me and Jessica, one of the more intimate, I think we were, you know, and we were, you know, remember this, you know, this wasn't that kind of show. So those scenes, we were kind of like, okay, let's, you know, and Jess and I were, you know, would always kid around and have fun. And, you know, so it was kind of hard for us to take this seriously, but we did. And, but I think right at one of those moments, somebody let out a big sneeze or a cough or something. And we just, both of us lost it. I remember we both just lost it, you know, and it was like, oh, that was such a good take. You know, I don't know if I can get another good one like that. I mean, yeah, do I remember the, you know, the heat and the uncomfortable? Yeah, I remember it, but it's not what's at the front of my mind. You know, the front of my mind are, number one, the people. And we had so much fun. I mean, you're putting on, you know, putting on suits and running around shooting robots. I mean, and then they give you a check at the end of the week, you know. It's pretty good.
All of those moments where you've laughed through a scene or sneezed through a scene, especially back when tape was still being used, all of that costs money as well. So you're trying hard not to break.
Yes, indeed. Because that you would. You're exactly right, Jason. Because back then, and especially, you know, that story I told you about when I was doing Wizards and Warriors, where I had that big entrance and I kept messing it up.
Yeah.
Every time I messed that up, I don't know how many thousands of dollars that was, because it was a huge scene and they had smoke and they had all kinds of stuff that had to go together. And I kept blowing the line, you know. And finally, like the story was, Bill Bixby was the director, and he finally just said, come here. And I thought he's going to fire me. I mean, I thought I was done. I thought, that's it. They're going to fire me. I remember, this is my first show I've done, you know, first thing I'd ever done in Hollywood. And he said, what's the line? He asked him, and they gave him the line. And he said, man, I'm glad that's not mine. Okay, let's do it. And I started laughing, and boom, I got it just like that. Because he broke, you know, I was going through so much fear. I was coming through so much fear, I couldn't get it out. So he made sure he got rid of that, and he was a wonderfully knowledgeable, kind man to do so.
Well, one of the other stories that you were telling, which, I mean, speaking of not forgetting your lines or breaking during a scene, is being out of the country and hearing your own voice, you know, hearing your own character dubbed over somebody else's voice.
Hearing my voice in French and Spanish. Yeah, both. Yeah, I don't know where they got that guy. Because, you know, all of a sudden you turn it on. I was in Canada, and I turned it on. And I went, oh, Captain Power. You know, and then I hear, and I'm like, what the hell's that? You know, and I'm thinking, I got kind of a higher voice. You know, this guy was, and I'm like, holy moly. You know, and I thought, we're in Spanish? We're in French? I didn't even know it. I had no idea.
That has to be surreal, though, to be watching your own face in words that you don't know.
Oh, it's nuts. But I think, you know, me as an actor, I think, what was the audition process for that, by the way? Did they, like, listen to my voice and try to get something close? Or did they just say, ah, screw it, just put that guy in, we don't care? You know, I think it was probably more the latter than the first one.
And, you know, these languages, you don't make the same mouth movements on some of the words. And
oh, yeah.
And so it's got to be awkward.
Yeah, you know, and sometimes it doesn't translate either, I don't think, you know. That, I always laugh because I remember I had a line where I think we used it more than once. It was my favorite ones was keep it frosty, keep it frosty. Because I remember looking at that and thinking, how the hell am I supposed to make keep it frosty? You know, and I said to him, you know, keep it frosty? Yeah, that's a term. You know, that's a term. It's a military term. I said, it is? Oh, yeah. I said, that's a bunch of bullshit. That's... But okay.
It sounds like somebody's silly slang more than a military term.
I think it more was like, just shoot the shot. Let's go. You know, shut up. Let's go. What are you complaining about? Let's go. to this day, Jason, if I write a letter or something, I always write, keep it frosty, power on, Tim Donegan.
That is incredible. It's interesting, some of the experience that you've had during this time, because it was such a weirdly different time than we have now. And, you know, we talked about how they didn't have the press team to teach you how to do things back then, and how that shaped the way you interact with fans of the show. But then they also didn't have a lot of the laws that kept you safe that they may have now. And you were talking about like the Macy's Day Parade and how just exhausted and dangerous some of the off-screen things you had to do.
Dangerous to a point. I mean, but again, you know, Jason, that's a normal part of shooting a series. I mean, you're not getting a lot of sleep no matter what, especially if you're, you know, like, you know, you're Captain Power or you're Davy Crockett or... And not to belittle him, but if you're a scout, you know, you're in this shot and then you'll wait 2 hours and then you're in this shot for 2 or 3 hours, then you might be done, depending on what episode, right? If you're Dayton Crowder, you're Captain Power, you're in shot 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7, and, you know, you're there, you're the man. So, and then again, you also have other obligations, which are, you know, okay, during lunch, you know, Entertainment Tonight wants to do an interview or blah, 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 this. Or we want you during lunch, can you do these radio promotions or something like that? Or so you're constantly just, you know, and you just learn to get by on little amounts of sleep. But you also learn, it does teach you how to make yourself go to sleep. You know, like, okay, you're like, I've got to go to sleep because I got to get up in 5 hours. I got to get up in 4 hours, whatever it is. And then if you're lucky, you know, maybe during the day you can grab a cat nap or something, you know, if you are, luckily for me, if they were doing any kind of dread stuff, you know, I wasn't in it usually. I could, you know, get a little reprieve then, unless they had something else planned for me, which it was possible. People think that doing TV and being an actor is an easy job. And in many ways it is, you know, in many ways it's certainly not digging ditches. Don't get me wrong, but it's tiring. It's, it's exhausting. You don't have any kind of life. Well, here's what always happens when you do a series. All of a sudden you'll do the series and maybe you're in the middle of it or maybe it's over. And then somebody will say something about somebody, some actor. And you'll go, oh yeah, I like him. Is he in any? And they look at you and go, he died. And you're like, what? They go, yeah, he died like 5 months ago. You're like, I never heard it. Because you don't know what's going on in the world. You know, you really don't. You have no idea. You know, like, is that a law now? I didn't know that. All kinds of things like that happen where you just lose track or you wake up in the morning and you don't know what day it is. And especially, I remember being on a press tour for Crockett. And I remember I woke up, I think it was in Cleveland. And I literally, for almost 35 or 40 seconds, which is a long time, I could not tell you where I was. I didn't know what city I was in. I didn't know what hotel I was in. I just was exhausted. But that's part of the deal. And you also get to meet nice people. And you also get to have people tell you how nice you are and good you are. And, you know, and pet you like you're good, you know. And that our egos love that. You know? So, yeah, that's good. It's good. You know, I've had all kinds of jobs, man. I've had acting jobs. I've had warehouse jobs. I've had, construction jobs. Acting's a good job.
You do get to be in the Macy's Day Parade when you're Captain Power.
I did. And of course, that, as I told you, we were in Vancouver. Well, actually, outside of Vancouver, 2 hours. It was a 2-hour drive every day from the set, which was in a middle of nothing. As I told you, we would take helicopters up to where we would shoot because there's no roads. But I literally was shooting on a mountain in Vancouver, British Columbia, got a van, drove down the mountain to the lake. They held up some blankets. I took off my Davy Crockett outfit. They had my luggage there. I put on some jeans and a sweatshirt. A helicopter comes in, lands down. I get in the helicopter. I fly to the Vancouver, some little airport. I get in like a 4 or 5 seater, which made me a little bit nervous because I'm not good in small planes. Flew to Seattle, which, you know, short flight, got off the plane, walking on the tarmac. As I'm walking on the tarmac, the customs guy, I'm signing, okay, this, and, you know, this. As I'm walking, they take me over to a ramp that gets me up onto the next jet to Denver sit there for I don't know how long, switch planes, fly to Newark, New Jersey. The sun's coming up. Get out of the plane. I walk out. There's a car waiting for me. I get in the back of the car. There's my Davy Crockett outfit. They said, put on your outfit while we drive. So we drive into Manhattan. I put on the Davy Crockett outfit. I still haven't slept because I couldn't sleep on the plane. We drive up through the tunnel, get into Manhattan, go up the Upper West Side. They pull up on the, I don't know where we were, 90th Street, 89th, whatever it was. Get out. Guy says, you Tim Dunnigan? Yeah, come with me. Okay, he takes me over to this big float, huge float. It had a big, it looked like an a Native American headdress. Climb up those stairs. I climb up some steps and go. I mean, literally, we start moving. I'm in the lead float. There's the, you know, the band or something, and then me. And then all of a sudden, I'm going down Central Park West. 12 something hours ago, I was on top of a mountain in Vancouver where there was no running water, no bathrooms. Now I'm going down Central Park West, but I'm in the same clothes, you know, which is weird. And I'm waving, and it's freezing cold. It's so cold, I can't tell you how cold it was. And one of the guys, one of the other extras that were dressed as Native Americans, he sees I'm freezing. He says, here, and he hands me these white, like, gardener gloves. And I put them on because I was freezing. And if you watch, see the pictures of me in there, I got these white gloves on. And I'm waving to people, you know, and, oh, I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe I was there. And then all of a sudden, you know, you start thinking to yourself, oh, my God, this is my life going to be totally different than it was before. Am I gonna, you know, like, am I gonna be able to play softball with my friends? And am I gonna be able to go to the grocery store? And you start thinking all this stuff, you know, as you're going down the street, lack of sleep, and I start thinking, oh man, this is it. Will I be like a Hollywood guy now? And this, you know, and as I'm thinking how these big things, maybe I can get a car. I can get a nice car now. I'm thinking all this stuff. I hear a guy yelling, Tim, hey, Tim, look over here, Tim. And I kind of look around, and there's a guy in this, you know, they have all those big stands, you know, along the side. And he's up near the top, and he's in a Mets cap and, like, down vest. And he's, Tim, he's waving, hey! And I go, hey! And he goes, who the hell are you? I thought, oh, yeah, I don't got nothing to worry about. I'm okay. I'm fine. Nobody knows. So then I finished the parade. I had to sing a song. I had to mouth a song, and they cut a verse and didn't tell me, so I looked like I was doing Captain Power in French. That pissed me off. But then you know, I got off the float, and they took me up to some big boardroom, and as I recall, I had a drink. I had a stiff drink because I was freezing, and I was so exhausted. I was so tired. And then they finally let me go back to a hotel, and I just passed out. I was so tired. And then the next day, I flew back. I flew back that next morning and back up on the mountain. You know, that's how it goes.
23 in and out.
That was it, brother. You're in, you're out. You know, that's how it goes. I said, well, can we stay an extra day? No, you can't stay an extra day. You got to get you back. You got to get back. So I was like, okay, I'll go back. And you know what's funny? Here I have all that recollection of, I have no recollection of flying home at all. I probably was sleeping. I probably passed out. It's funny how you remember that the getting there, as far as getting home, I don't remember any part of it. I was happy to do so. You know, again, another show that I was lucky to do, and great crew, great people, a lot of fun. You know, Disney was unique, but other than that, it was pretty good.
I know you had some poor experiences with Disney, but you also were Davy Crockett, which is, you have what, four people that did that job?
That's correct. You know, it's a unique, I always tell people I'm in a unique groups. Number one, Davy Crockett, that's a pretty unique group. That's John Wayne, Fess Parker, Billy Bob Thornton, and me. So I don't mind being part of that group at all.
Yeah.
But the best group is the Captain Power group, because that's me. For a while there, I thought there was going to be a new Captain Power, but I don't know. Maybe there will be. I hope so.
You know, we talked about that before, and I think it would be wonderful if they found a way to revitalize the property, bring you in as, however, the older mentor.
Oh, I don't know. You know, that was like 10 years ago. So I don't know. I think now I might be too old for it. They could probably find somebody better, but it'd be nice to do it. Maybe I could be one of the, you know, the guy gets digitized or something. You know, that'd be fun. Some old fat guy just gets digitized. You know, that'd be cool. They say, that guy looks familiar. Doesn't he look familiar? Zzz, that'd be gone.
It would be neat. It would be neat to see them bring this back.
I think it's a viable story. I think it's still a viable product, especially with the technology that we have today, as far as film that we didn't have then, you know. It would be different because of that. Great memories for me also, Jason, are being in the middle of a scene and stop. Okay, we got to figure out because Sauron's going to come in. Where is he coming? Here? So then I've got to run this. Okay, and then where do I look exactly? And then blah, 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 blah. And, you know, that kind of stuff. We figured it out as we went along. Nobody had ever kind of done certain things we had to do before. Okay, well, how many, you know, where is the shot for the gun where, on this scene? Where are they going to be able to shoot? And da, 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 da. We had to figure that all out in the filming. But like you said in the beginning here, the rules on safety, you know, sometimes you got to bend them a little bit to get the shot, you know. And I told you that the best was, you know, I'll always love the scenes where they show us, you know, getting the hits on the armor, you know, those flashes. You know, usually it was a squib, what they call a squib, which is it's a wire, you know, that it goes to a certain thing on your shirt, you know, and you've got a bunch of wires behind you so that it pop, 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 right? Well, it's the only time I've ever experienced this, but we came on the set and they said, okay, and there was a guy, one of the crew guy, and he had this air compressor and a gun, like a rifle.
Oh.
I said, what's that? And they said, oh, that's going to shoot. It shoots these little round exploding balls. I said, exploding balls? They said, yeah, because then when it hits, that spark, it's right there in the shot. So we don't have to, you know, you don't have to squib you. We can just do it without squibbing you. And I said, but he's going to shoot him, right? And he said, yeah. I said, and he goes, oh, no, they'll hit the armor. Don't worry about that. Yeah, well, let me tell you. You know, I was like, is this guy an Olympic shooting guy or something? Because I got right here. I got shot. I'll never forget it. I came out, and it's in the show. I got shot. I pulled out my gun, and all of a sudden the guy pop, pop, and I felt it. But then went, boom. And I was like, oh, my God.
So right in the neck.
The guy was like, sorry, man. Sure. Okay. They went, well, they shouldn't hurt that much. I said, let me shoot you. Let's see what you think about it. But yeah, you know, well, we got the shot. We got the shot. That's what it was.
You took one in the neck, but you got the shot.
Yeah. It's, you know, every once in a while you had to take one for the team.
What a mess. I would not have expected on Captain Power that they hired a poor assassin to shoot at the actors.
You know, I was a little, but then again, I was also surprised when I did the A-Team and they said, we want you to get in this Stearman, this open cockpit double, you know, biplane with the two seats, you know, we want you to get in there. And I said, and they went, no, we want you to go up and do some of the shots. We're going to put cameras out on the wings. And then like one right here, and we want pictures of you actually up there flying in the plane. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So the pilot was a guy named Art Scholl, who was considered one of the best pilots, Hollywood pilots ever. So I was confident because I knew who he was. He was hi. He goes, did they explain to you what we're going to do? I said, yeah. They said, we're just going to go up and get some shots of me. And he said, no, we're going to do some stunts. I said, with me in it? And they said, yeah. And that's when I thought, huh, I bet they wouldn't let George Peppard go up there in that plane. But me, don't let me go up. Maybe they had already decided they were going to replace me and said, ah, the hell with him. If he dies, he dies. Who cares? Because we already got another guy coming in.
But they got the shot.
You get the shot, buddy. That's what matters. So, so I got in the plane. And I remember Art, as we were pulling out on the runway, said, you know, I had to put a headset on so I could talk to him, and then we'd take it off while we're shooting. And I had it on, and I heard him say, all right, Bill. I thought, okay, Art, we're good to go, and I'm just waiting. And I hear, and Art says, hey, listen, this is American gas we brought down, right? And the guy goes, yeah, pretty sure, Art. Yeah, it's American gas. And I go, what's that? And he says, oh, that Mexican gas, man, it's no good. He says, I wanted to make sure that because we got Mexican gas, it could go out when we're up there. This is as we're taxiing out.
And they were pretty sure.
It's like the bear. Remember, I told you the guy asked him, and he said, "I'm pretty sure." They're always pretty sure. And that's when you have to learn to go, no, let's be real sure. But anyway, so yeah, we went out and went up and took off, and it was great. I mean, it was beautiful flying in this. I've never been in anything like that where, you know, the wind and I had goggles on. And then he said, okay, here we go. And that's, oh my God, that's the last thing I remember. He just, he took it over and we did flips and we did strafing runs and G-forces and I was getting sick as a dog. Oh, man, I was feeling terrible. And, of course, I'd had a big lunch. Nobody told me I was going up with this plane. He goes, hold it. Keep holding. We got one more. Just hold it. Hold it. And I was like, okay, because he knew. He knew I was getting sick. So we did it, and I had the machine gun, the thing. All right, that's good. Let's go back. We went back. I'm not kidding you. The wheels hit the runway. I leaned over. I puked my guts out. Just puked my guts out. I was so sick. And they pull up, and Jason, they say, okay, how you doing? I go, oh, I'm bad, man. I'm bad. They said, all right, well, you could go to the hotel. Don't worry. And I was like, good. Oh, wait a minute. The camera didn't work. We got to redo it. I said, I'll pay you $1,000. And I didn't have $1,000. I'll pay you $1,000 not to go back up to the plane. He said, no, you'll be fine. You'll be good. He goes, oh, there's nothing left to throw up. You'll be fine now.
Wow.
Okay. I went back up. I did the whole thing, did it all again, and I felt so terrible. I was just so sick.
So the character makeup is what stopped you from looking green on camera?
Yes. I must have been wearing very dark makeup because, brother, I mean it. I'm not good on boats. Planes, usually I'm okay. I'm not usually doing this and that, right?
Yeah, you're not normally upside down.
Yeah, I'm not usually. And remember, there's no... You know, like nobody said, okay, let's go through this and here's what's going to happen and you're going to feel this and it was just get in and let's go. So, you know, I'm sure these days, it's a lot different. I'm sure, but we're down in the middle of Mexico. Nobody gives a shit. You know, you just let's shoot it and get out of here, you know, because remember that we're shooting in Mexico. There's all kinds of things going wrong. I told the story about when they were supposed to paint all the Jeeps camouflage. You know, we hired a bunch of painters down there. I don't, you know, because it's the A-team. We're crashing Jeeps left and right. Right, man. So they said, you paint camouflage. OK, no problem. We need. And we were filming up in some town outside of Acapulco on the way up there from, by the way, in a van, me and Mr. T and Dwight Schultz and a couple other people got stopped by the Army, pulled out and had rifles put on us. That was another fun thing. And T was like, what the hell are we doing? I said, well, no. Don't say a word. Just be quiet. And the driver, I don't know. And I'm looking around. I see, like, honest to God, this kid, he had to be 16 years old with this rifle, an M1. I'll never forget it. Right at me. And I just went back, faced the car. And I guess the driver paid him off, gave him some money. So we get up to the town. And this is like 7 in the morning. We get up there and no Jeeps. They don't show up. And we're up there and the crew's up there and we're burning money, man. We're just burning money. And finally somebody goes, I hear them. They're coming up. I hear them. Sure enough, the Jeeps come up. They're all got big daisies on them. They put big daisies all over because they didn't know what camouflage was, I guess. Maybe the guy didn't speak English. He just kept saying, okay, no problem. And anyway, the director just sat down and cried. Just tears. And they said, you can go back to the hotel today. You don't have to. We won't be shooting this today.
You have to pay off the gunmen again tomorrow.
Yeah. You know, just and that's how it worked down there. You know, that was common. You know, I went to school in Mexico when I was 15. I went there for a summer and I learned early. Yeah. You know, if you got pulled over by a cop, you just pay him off. You know, I was with a bunch of priests. You know, I was in Catholic high school. I went down there with some brothers and priests. They paid him off. You know, that's just how it was. It didn't matter. Yeah, it was tough to shoot down there.
Now that you've dusted off the story chops and you've had two shows under your belt where you've got to talk to a ton of people, is this something that we're going to see more of you from or hit the West Coast a little bit?
Well, you know what? I can't say anything right now yet, but working on something.
Good.
This would be in the western part of the U.S., but I can't say anything right now yet, but I'm involved in the show itself, putting it on. we might have some news very soon, and it'll be a Captain Power deal, too.
Oh, that'll be awesome.
So working on that. Keep your fingers crossed, and I promise as soon as if that comes to fruition, I'll let everybody know. But as far as your question, as far as what we've done this year and hopefully next year, if I'm lucky enough to be asked to come back, then I'm a very lucky man, Jason, because I'd be more than happy to come back and meet more fans and tell more stupid stories. And, for me, get a shot of life adrenaline by meeting the fans and the it's just a wonderful time. And I certainly hope that I get to do it again. Absolutely.
It was a joy getting to meet you and through this, but also just in Augusta and having Steve be your guy that whole weekend.
He was invaluable. You know, my sister, God bless her, she did a great job. But man, Steve was just on top. All I had to do was just sign and talk to people. And I didn't have to worry about anything else as far as, is my belt safe or is my crew jacket okay? He took care of everything. And, you did the same for me and my sister did the same for me. And, at first I remember thinking when Todd told me, I thought, well, I don't need anybody to do that. Oh, man, I do. it was so much easier and great to have somebody there just, kind of get a drink of water, something. It's so, and can I just say for everybody listening, anybody out there who might hear this, who is maybe someone who would be good at one of these shows, as far as maybe an ex-actor or somebody, whatever, I've never been treated as nicely as I was treated on those two trips. I mean, I work for Disney and I work for NBC and I work for a lot of big places that flew me places. And I have never in my life been treated as nicely as I was treated in Augusta and in Shepherdsville, Kentucky. It would be my pleasure to do that again. Absolutely.
Well, I know there are other shows that would love to see you too. So
yeah, hey, great.
In other regions of the country, I'm excited that you guys might do something in the West, whether this materializes or another show invites you. There's always people that are having fun being around, collecting toys, collecting memorabilia, getting signatures, hearing your stories, and the time you were spending with people, to me, it was incredible because I'm a talker and I would have asked people to leave and you were still like, no, stay, tell me more, be here, be involved. I was really impressed.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, that was the best part. I mean, that was why I'm there. Hey, listen, it was great. Don't get me wrong, to sell some pictures and stuff like that and come out with a little money in my pocket. I'm not going to lie about that, of course. But believe me, I would have done it for nothing. It was just it was so much fun. And especially I really enjoyed doing the panel in Shepherdsville because I get a lot out of it from the like I said, the questions that people ask are fantastic. They're just, you're just like, wow. I mean, Jason, they know the shows better than I do. They know the series better than me.
Oh, of course.
So you stood next to me many times and heard me say, I don't remember what that was. Oh, okay. Oh yeah, that. Okay. But they remember. It's amazing what memories they have about that kind of stuff and what, it meant to them. And again, we get through that whole thing of just people, I just can't believe how much that show that I thought for years was a forgotten thing of my career. It's been amazing, just amazing. And a blessing, just blessing.
Yeah. We have seen proof in hand. It has not been forgotten.
Let's do it some more. Let's do it some more, man. We'll do some more and hang out, go and have fried pickles. Yeah, man. Maybe a cocktail.
We appreciated that you trusted Steve to bring you to Todd and I, and that you trusted Todd and myself.
You guys were great.
Well, you guys were great, and it was genuinely a blast. And I'm hoping that we do get to do more stuff. And also, anytime you want to chat on a mic, I'm always willing to hit record.
Well, I enjoy talking to you. I enjoy always talking to you, and it's nice that we, as you're my friend, and we can catch up. Hopefully, there's some material in here that people will enjoy hearing. I'll just, want to make sure before, if anybody ever wants to directly contact me, I got an email I use just for fans.
Yeah.
it's Timothy, then Dunnigan, but Dunnigan is Dunnigain at gmail.com.
Nice play.
Anybody who writes me there, I promise you, I'll get back to you. But it doesn't have to be to buy you. If you just want to say hi or tell me about your day or whatever, I promise you, I'll be glad to hear from you. And I'll be happy to send a message back. And hopefully we'll keep in touch and I'll make more friends. So that's it. Again, it's Timothy, Dunneagain at gmail.com.
And so speaking of making more friends, you're also involved in some of the Captain Power Facebook groups. Do you float an Instagram or anything like that, or are you wisely avoiding that level of social media?
Yeah, I don't do the Instagram.
Ah, you're smarter than me.
You know, I'm too old, too stupid. I do Facebook. I mainly, and here's another thing. Let me put that out. I get a lot of people, you know, fans who want to friend me on Facebook, and I don't friend them. And I don't want you to think it's not because I don't want your friendship. I hope I've made that clear. It's because I only use that for family and friends. It's my only contact with certain people, and I just kind of keep it that way. But that's why I set up the email. If you want to ask me something or something, email me directly. I promise you I'll get back to you. It may take a day or two, but I promise you that, you know, I want direct contact with people who watch the show, who like, or what, or any show I did. You know, if you like, if you remember my career, I think the least I can do is answer your email. So love to hear your stories. If you got stories about watching the show, send them. And I'll tell them when I do a show again, I'll relay them. It'll be great. We can kind of all kind of hear the same stuff and it'll be fun.
I mean, you've made it through an orangutan, a bear, some wolves, an open cockpit plane.
That's right. People don't know. Yeah, I was the king of the animals in Hollywood. I worked with Kodiak grizzly bears. I wrestled alligators. I had timber wolves laid on me. I worked very closely with two majorly big orangutans. So, I'm good with animals. That's what I've learned.
And you spent two weekends on shows with all of us animals. So you came out unscathed.
You guys are. You guys are all crazy. You're all nuts. I like hanging with you guys. You make me feel young. And you take good care of me, which was really nice. You guys were great. I really enjoyed it. And hopefully, anybody out here listening, please contact me. Otherwise, I hope I see you down the road.
That'll be excellent. Thank you, sir.
All right, buddy.
Let's end it here. Thanks again for spending time with us discussing toys and other geeky things. Our logo was made by Rhino. The music we use was created by Self Help. You can find Joel on Instagram at Order of Battle Pod. Jason is on Twitter at Order of Battle PD. Our email is orderofbattlepod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, and thank you for your likes, comments, outreaches, and just being here with us.
This has been the Order of Battle.